on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers, this is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor, Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. This is our Monday, May 19th, 2025 edition. Happy Monday to everybody. Excited to kick the week off right with you. And what I plan to do for this hour is to help you become a better investor, answering your finance and investment questions and giving you perspective and data so that you can make better decisions with your money. Bring you the tools, the mindset, so that you're not caught up in the hype, you're not caught up in the headlines, that you're focusing on the facts and what really matters. And so I'm Justin Klein, and that is my objective for this hour. So I'm ready for you. Now, in just a bit, we'll talk about today's market performance and run down the show topics. But as usual, we'll tackle this caller question first.
I went through the last 6 months of podcast and haven't heard anything about Old Republic International, ticker ORI. I have a small position in the company. What are your thoughts on Old Republic being a cornerstone in my portfolio long term as one of the buy it and forget it stocks? Thank you for all your time in helping me learn and grow as an informed investor. I look forward to hearing your answer on the podcast.
All right, looking at Old Republic, and as you would imagine, this is a name that's been around a long time. It's also a pretty boring name for most people. It's insurance. It's an insurance business. It writes property and casualty insurance, and it's a name that we actually own for clients. So we like the name. We like the company. It's not exciting. It has a market cap of about $9.5 billion, so it's a mid-cap name. It's been around, I'm zooming all the way back on a chart. It went IPO all the way back in 1972. That's how long this has been around. Split adjusted, it was at IPO'd around about $1.15. Split adjusted, now we're at $38.57. And it has about a 3% dividend yield. So it's had good, nice, solid performance over the years. And if you look at profitability, return equity is around 13%. That's pretty good for a mid-size insurance company. And they have minimal debt on their balance sheet, good cash flow, about $1.3 billion. On an $8.5 billion enterprise value, that's solid. So, one worry, and this is something we're looking into, would be tariffs, right? Where if you're a property and casualty insurer, you have to pay out claims that replaces property, whether that's a home or whether that is somebody's car, whether that is somebody's material, stuff that was stolen, right? So when you have tariffs, the cost of goods generally are going up, it's going to cost more to replace that. So that's one worry that we're having. But in general, that is more of a near-term type of problem. The whole industry will have to deal with it. They'll have to adjust prices, etc. So it's not something I think long-term is a problem. But I would be concerned that level, in the short term at least, that it could weigh on the share price. But if you're talking about a set it and forget it type of company, this is that type of company. Very well run, boring, but growing its earnings consistently over time and allocating capital and that cash flow effectively. And most of that cash flow is going towards buying back shares, which we like. In 2022, they had 308 million shares outstanding just 3 years ago. Now it's at 247 million shares outstanding. So they bought back about 20% of their float over the past 3 years. That's pretty strong. It's a pretty strong shareholder yield. And that's on top of the dividend, 3% dividend that you're getting. So big fan of Old Republic, but understand near term, there could be a bit of headwinds with the tariffs. Now, we have a lot of ground to cover over the next 45 minutes or so. My main focus point is about real estate and gold. A lot of people think they are the best long-term investments, at least according to many surveys. So we're going to dig into what is the best long-term performer. Is it gold? Is it real estate? Is it equities? And then how you should think about them in context to your entire portfolio. Okay, so we'll look at that. We also have some other topics on the docket. One is minerals and what minerals are essential for modern warfare. You know, we're getting into more contentious geopolitical times. We obviously have the war in Ukraine. We have the issues in Gaza. And warfare, just like everything technologically, is evolving. And different metals are now needed for modern warfare, just like different metals are needed in the traditional B2B, B2C technology space. So we're going to look at that and figure out, you know, how you should position your portfolio in the harder assets besides just gold, right, or real estate, in order to take advantage of the evolving landscape in warfare. Also, if we have time, bank rules from 2008 that were put in place post-financial crisis are starting to be rolled back. Now, you could say that's a bad thing, right, because we had 08, or you could say, hey, that's going to open the economy up for more growth. So we'll take hopefully a balanced look at what that might mean. Okay, we'll look at those stories as well as voice bank calls. One is on the crypto market and the other is on iBit, the iShares Bitcoin Trust. And of course, questions that came in via the comment section over on our YouTube channel as well. And of course, I welcome your live calls. Your finance and investment questions are number one. So if you call during the live 4 to 5 Pacific time hour, you get put on the front of the line. So we always encourage those and prioritize those calls. So don't hesitate to reach out. But we're going to head into a short break right now. And on the other side, I'll talk about today's market activity and take questions on the Invest Talk Anytime listener line at 888-99-CHART.
Serious investors are certain to have finance and investment questions.
Hello, Invest Talk. This is Jose from New York, and I'm looking into buying a small position in Dollar Tree or Dollar General.
And the best person to ask your question in the right way is you.
Hi, Invest Talk. I was calling in with a question on the stock Nike.
And 24/7, rain or shine, Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero stand ready to provide their unbiased answers.
Now, it is up into a little bit of resistance, so you probably want a little bit of consolidation here.
So this company does not capitalize itself with equity. It does not capitalize itself with debt.
Your participation makes InvestTalk better.
Let's play a caller question from 888-99-CHART.
This is James from Georgia. I was trying to call about ticker symbol SCCO.
So don't forget to call InvestTalk.
I appreciate the show, guys. Thank you.
888-99-CHART.
Recently, I had a somewhat unpleasant shopping experience. Not because the store was bad, but because the checkout system was very slow. And that was annoying. As I was waiting, I realized that I might have to run to the ATM to get cash. And that just made things worse. That was a frustrating experience. Then, about 2 weeks ago, I was at a restaurant that used Square. That transaction was quick and easy. The staff was able to focus on great service instead of fumbling with tech issues. So I decided to look into Square. And here's what I learned. Square's point-of-sale system is user-friendly and highly intuitive. Plus, Square provides the tools needed to manage behind-the-scenes work, too. In fact, business owners can track sales, stay on top of inventory, and get a better understanding of their customers, all in the same place. The reporting features are especially helpful when trying to make sense of what's working and where to focus one's time. Square supports all major credit cards and payment methods, including contactless options like Apple Pay and Google Pay. So checkout is fast and easy. If you happen to be a business owner, Square makes it simple to set up an online store in just a few minutes. So Square is perfect for those wanting to expand beyond brick and mortar. Square is designed for businesses at every stage, whether they are just getting started or looking to grow. It delivers the tools to do both. Square keeps up, so you don't have to slow down. Get everything you need to run and grow your business without any long-term commitments. And why wait? Right now, you can get up to $200 off Square hardware at square.com/go/invest. That's square.com/go/invest. Run your business smarter with Square. Get started today.
InvestTalk downloads have now surpassed 61 million. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero provide unbiased answers to your finance and investment questions. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Now let's go take a look at the market today. And over the weekend, we had the downgrade of the U.S. debt by Moody's, and that kind of caught headlines. But, you know, I've been doing this a while and we've had this happen before, and there was everyone talking about it. Rates were up for a short period of time, 24 hours. It was kind of similar, kind of, I think it was on a Friday before. And by the middle of the next week, nobody talked about it. It was old news. And I think this is exactly the same. And you saw that today. It bounced back even faster. We were down after hours on Friday, even this morning before trading started. We opened down pretty significantly on the S&P. Significant, say about 1%. But we, throughout the day, we rallied back. And the NASDAQ and the S&P barely closed positive. The Dow closed up about 0.3%. So really nothing doing. You even saw rates up and bonds down, and those rallied as well. So the TLT held. I've said this before. I'm kind of watching the 85 level on the TLT. TLT is the 30-year Treasury bond ETF. This has the most duration, lowest credit risk. This is your proxy to see, okay, if you're taking duration risk in the markets, are you being hurt or not? And this has been in a downtrend since September. It was at 101. That's kind of where rates bottomed. And the expectations for a continuation of Fed rate cuts kind of stopped. And now you've seen this pullback went from 101 back in September all the way to about 85, kind of the start of the year. Is this start of the year? What is this? Middle of January. And we bounced, got to 94. Now we're back to 85, close to 86 today. So we briefly dip below 85, but very, very short time. So I'll be watching this, you know, just because it was saved today doesn't mean it will continue to be so. But ultimately, if you're going to allocate money to U.S. Treasuries, I don't think this is really changing your mind very much. I think what will change the minds is what really comes out of Washington with this new spending bill. Right, they're trying to raise the debt ceiling by $5 trillion. They're trying to obviously spend more money and find tax cuts and ways to cut, as well as ways to spend through the tax code. And you know, it's been shot down once by fellow Republicans, and it's still kind of contentious. So we'll see how the market reacts to the final bill, because it's still a lot up in the air. But ultimately, there really wasn't a lot of market movement that told you a whole lot today. Besides, a debt downgrade doesn't really matter much, to be honest with you. It's more of the longer term fiscal trajectory. Moody's was telling people what they already knew. Okay, this isn't side of left field that nobody knows about our fiscal situation. Everyone knows about it. Okay, so when you get markets move dramatically when the market's surprised by something. Okay, like Liberation Day, the market already was pricing in 30, 40% tariff, something where we are now, right? And then he went way bigger and went through a process that was way different than the market was expecting, and the market reacted accordingly. So that's when you get the big moves. Once again, this Moody's cut, it's not really news, okay? Now, what other aspects of the market? The dollar down 0.7%. Gold was up 1.5%. So that looks, at least short term, to be at a nice little bottom. It pulled back to the 20-day moving average. That's where it found support back in April. Doesn't mean it ultimately will find support there, but at least got a nice little bounce today. We'll see if we can follow through tomorrow. You had WTI up 0.3%, the crude oil, and you had Bitcoin futures up 1.2. Bitcoin's still kind of hanging around this between, let's say, 100,000 and 110, or not even 110, 107, I think was the all-time high. It hasn't gotten above that. So it's kind of hanging in the 105 level mostly. And it's pretty interesting because I'll be watching to see if this really breaks out. And this, I think, will be a future tell to what is going to happen with the markets. Because ultimately, Bitcoin mainly is a liquidity proxy. If liquidity is doing well, Bitcoin tends to go up. When liquidity tightens, Bitcoin tends to have downtrends. And right now, Bitcoin's just kind of hanging out. It's hanging around, like I said, these 105 levels, not breaking the all-time high, which was up around 107, but it's threading it at 106. And if we break out, that's obviously positive indicator for liquidity and ultimately equities in the near term. But we'll see if we can hang around on the S&P above this 5,700 to 6,000 on the S&P. As long as we hang out in that range, that's just consolidation to eventually break higher. I think if we break below, especially 5,600, yeah, 5,700, I'm going to call it 5,700. 5,700, break below that, I think that you have a rougher argument for this being a real breakout. Yes, we're above all the major moving averages, but how long are we going to hold there? If we hold above it for, you know, the next few, 2-3 weeks, I think that is very bullish for the markets. If we reverse rather quickly, I think it's very bearish for the market. So a lot to really assess here over the coming weeks to see if this is just a short covering rally that was perpetuated by OPEX, or is it something that has staying power? And I think we'll know a lot in the coming weeks. But still to come, my focus point and more answers to your questions. So I encourage you to call now at 888-99-CHART.
Justin Klein is here, and he's ready with answers to your finance and investment questions. Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Now, my main focus point today concerns this topic: why real estate and gold aren't always the best long-term investments, despite what a lot of investors think. Now, this is a survey done by Gallup, and what they found was that 37% of adults think that real estate is the best investment for the long haul. That's up 1% from last year, which was at 36%. Gold is the second most popular choice. So real estate was number one. Gold is the second most popular choice here. And that was 23% of people said it's the best long-term investment. That's 5 points higher than last year. Only 16% think that stocks or mutual funds are the best long-term investment. That's down 6 percentage points from last year's report. And this was taken in early April, so maybe that skewed it here, right? Because obviously early April, there's a lot of market volatility. And so maybe timing-wise, this wasn't that great. Stocks were down, gold was up, and you can see people always chase what's hot as opposed to stepping back and looking at the long-term returns. Now, what's interesting here is that real estate isn't always top of the list here. Gold was top of the list back in 2011, and that was when it was at 34% of respondents said it was the best long-term choice. So it's only at 23% now. It shows you that I don't even think gold has really hit the hype machine yet within the average population. So that's one of the reasons why I do think gold sells more upside. There's still, everyone's not in yet, right? Usually it's when everyone's the most confident about a particular asset class. That's when kind of the top is in, but you know, you're not seeing that quite yet. It's up, but not to extreme levels. Now, real estate and gold certainly appreciate over time, and they're harder assets, and they certainly could over the next 20, 30 years be outperformers. I'm not even disputing that. But if you look longer term, over the last 30 years, S&P has returned about 10.3%. Gold's done about 7.4%, and real estate about 8.8%. Now, that's 30 years. That's not going back further. There are certainly periods where real estate and gold outperform. But what's most important to understand here is that you don't want to tie yourself to just one. You saw that in 08 when, I saw it here in Southern California. There were a lot of people I knew that were levered to real estate, and that was all their assets. And then you had the crash, and then a lot of them went bankrupt. And the same can be said about any asset class. Every asset class has its day in the sun. Every asset class has its rough periods. And so I think the story here is that you don't want to lean the boat all in one direction. A, because you could be wrong. But also, you need to create that diversity so that you hedge out that the risk of you being wildly off base. Now, most people have exposure to real estate through their home. I don't typically think that's it's part of the picture. It's part of the financial picture. It's what we build for clients. We look at their full financial picture. That's part of their other assets. But that's not an investment. That is a utility case. And it's a utility that tends to go up in price versus your car, which tends to go down in price, right? Both are utilities to you, but one goes up in price generally to hedge against inflation. Cars typically the opposite, right? So you can invest in things like REITs. You can invest in housing-related stocks. You can have rental properties. All of those are ways to gain exposure to real estate. And I think that's perfectly fine. There's nothing wrong with having that. Just because equities over long term has the best return doesn't mean that there's not a place for gold. There's not a place for REITs. There's not a place for other type of assets. But it's interesting here to see these polls that still put real estate and gold above equities, despite that longer term data that disputes that. So I wanted to highlight that because it's really important to have that longer term perspective and to stay diversified. I tend to like, it's called the perfect portfolio. I think it's 25% gold, 25% equities, 25% bonds, 25% cash, and you rebalance regularly. That's a better than like a dogs of the Dow type of portfolio. So if you're looking for something like that, I like that better than leaning all on one side of the boat. On the next Invest Talk, we'll look into this topic. Restart of student loan repayments could squeeze consumer spending and slow economic growth. The resumption of federal student loan payments is reducing consumer purchasing power, leading to higher household budgets and potentially dampening economic growth due to lower consumer spending. That story tomorrow, but for now, I'm Justin Klein, and I'm ready to take your calls now on 888-99-CHART. James from New York, hang on, you will be next.
Rolls on, and you've got finance and investment questions for Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero. Call Invest Talk 888-99-CHART.
It's good to talk to James in New York looking at ASPI. Do you own it or looking to buy it?
I own this, and I own it on no fundamental basis. Company doesn't have earnings. But looks like they're in the pre-development of something called HALEU, which I believe is supposed to be useful in the production of uranium. But they did get some catalyst, some news that it's receiving funding from a company called TerraPower, which I believe is a Bill Gates-affiliated company. But do you think, as a high-risk play, this might be a good opportunity to take a spin on something like this if it's purely speculative?
Well, it's definitely speculative. They have very little revenue, only $1.2 million last quarter, and it's a $542 million market cap. And they're losing money this year. They are expected to make money next year, 5 cents a share on a $7.52 stock. So, you know, it's still expensive, but you know, the trends are positive. It's in an uptrend, and it's going to be wildly volatile. You know, you've seen it go in October. It was trading around $3, went all the way up to $9 and change in November, fell back all the way to a low recently. Let's see, this was in March, $3.70. And now it's doubled from there to $7.52 now. Now, so that's the type of volatility that you are going to get with this name. And you need to be prepared for that. Now, I'd rather buy when there's a bit of volatility to the downside to get more shares. Sure, I would rather, you know, play the buy the dip in this name until that uptrend breaks. Obviously, right now it's surging a bit, but this could easily break out to $10 and you miss it. I don't know. But it's certainly high risk. I like the space that it's in. Obviously, you know, I'm a big fan of uranium and the push towards that and being a source of baseload power. Now, how do you get there? How do you deploy these facilities effectively, safely, efficiently, cost-effectively? All of that is still up in the air in many ways. So if you have faith in their technology and their ability to help execute on that mission over the, you know, medium to long term, then I have no problem with this as a small position in your portfolio.
All right. Thank you.
No problem. Thanks for the call. Now let's go answer another YouTube question. As I think you know, we also post our podcast in video form over on our YouTube channel. So we get questions in the comment section there. So let's grab one now. Ugar says, hi, I'm thinking of adding this stock to my Roth IRA. Can I have your thoughts? O is the symbol. And this is Realty Income. This is one of, I believe it is, the largest retail REIT, public retail REIT. About a $51 billion market cap. It has consistently increased its funds from operation, which is effectively the earnings for a REIT, pretty much every year. Even in 2020, it increased its funds from operation by 2% in the midst of the pandemic. So that was pretty impressive. Sales are growing dramatically. They were, at least, but they have slowed down. They were growing about 30% about a year ago, now only about 10%. So, and this year expected to have sales growth in the mid-single digits. So not a fast grower anymore. Earnings are expected to continue to do well. 5.7% dividend yield. And if I look at, let's take a look at its profitability. Return on equity is sitting at about 2.5%. That is pretty low, but historically the return on equity is much higher. So I would want to see this rebound a bit more. You know, before 2019, it was at 5%. So it was just doing much better. Let me look at the debt profile. Yeah, it does have a good amount of debt. Its cash dividend pay ratio is fine, 77%. So it certainly could pay out this dividend. I have no issue with it. Over the long term, it goes up. It has strong diversity, right? Thousands and thousands of properties, and pays a nice dividend. So I'm inclined to like this name over the long term. So that was Realty Income. Oh, now let's touch a bit on, what do I get to? Let's get to how warfare is shaping the demand for certain metals. And this is coming from Robert Friedland. He is in the metal space, in the understands the demands of government and modern warfare. And what he's seeing is rising defense spending in military conflicts. Think Ukraine, think Kashmir, really around the world, is really exposing a shortage of certain metals. Copper is the big one because it goes into ammunition, but it goes into electricity. And there's a lot of overlap here with the demand for metals for warfare, as well as demand for metals in the green energy space. So copper, like I said, important for ammunition, same with zinc. And then niche materials, graphite, for example, germanium. These are used in weapon systems. And in the American government, high up, many are concerned about the supply chains of critical raw materials. Many are saying, Carnegie Endowment, excuse me, said that in February, they found mineral inventories for the U.S. National Defense stockpile has dwindled since the 1950s. Remember, post-World War II, right? We're still kind of geared up for who knows what was going to happen after that. And what they said was that it covers less than half the military demand in a hypothetical one-year conflict. So that's probably going to need to be stockpiled throughout the, you know, coming years. And China's dominance in raw critical minerals is a threat, not just to industry, but also to America's military dominance. Now, President Trump has issued several executive orders on minerals since he took office in January. And one is on to boost domestic mining, others deep sea extraction. So clearly it's on the radar. Doesn't seem to be at the top of the food chain within the Trump administration, but it's certainly on their radar. And, you know, the military industrial complex, shall we say, tends to be pretty bipartisan, right? They support both sides. And so I think this is a true issue and tells me that on the investment side, it is important to have exposure to the metals that are needed for military, as well as aerospace, for fighter jets, semiconductors. So some minerals there would be scandium for aerospace, beryllium, B-R-Y-L-L-I-U-M. It's for fighter jets. And then semiconductors contain gallium. And so, you know, these are all minerals that not talked about much, but finding ways to get exposure, I think, will be important throughout the coming years. And there are big companies going after this. BHP, Glencore, Barrick Mining. They're all looking to mainly buy copper mines, but all these other type of minerals that are needed as well. Project Blue estimates that copper demand will boost from higher military spending is about 500,000 tons per year, or about 1.5% of annual demand. And so it's not just the green energy space anymore. It's also the military space that's demanding these critical minerals. And copper is probably top of the list, but there are many others as well. Now let's keep things going and play another fresh question from 888-99-CHART.
Hi, this is Gwen from the East Coast. Thank you for all that you do and the great information that you provide. I have two questions. The first is, what are your thoughts on the institutionalization and regulation of the crypto market that has occurred thus far? And the second is, do you consider IBIT, the BlackRock crypto ETF, a viable investment vehicle to get crypto exposure? Thank you again for all that you do, and I'll listen to the podcast for the answer. Bye.
Well, let's separate crypto and Bitcoin. Even though Bitcoin is a cryptocurrency, it's cleaner. Let's just say that. And IBIT, that's what you're investing in. You're investing in Bitcoin. You're not investing in the cryptocurrency industry. There are a lot of people within the industry that are Bitcoin maximalists. They just think that's all we need. The rest is just a sideshow, and in many instances, creates a bad rap for the space. And I tend to lean in that direction. Let's just say that. Now, I think there are applications for crypto, for decentralization, for tokenization that will gain traction over the coming decades. But I also think there are a lot of frauds. There are a lot of just people that are in it to take control of something they can't control in the, what they call the TradFi industry, right? Traditional finance. And there are just a lot of bad actors that are seeing crypto as a way to do whatever they want, make up the rules, right? That's what you can do when you create a coin. You can make up the rules, and anybody can go buy it. So if you have a good marketing system behind it, you can get anyone to buy it, and it's anonymous, right? So it becomes a, you know, for all the people, all the haters, it is a place that laws are broken under the cover of cryptocurrency, and money is moved to bad actors, and there are a lot of problems within the space. Now, will regulation solve that? It's up to the regulators. You know, how are they good actors? Are they acting in good faith for the consumer? Or are they in it for the donors that are funding the campaigns, for example? Or those within the parties, within government, utilizing it for their own gain, right? And making sure that the laws that are put in place still allow them to function and keep the grift going, right? And I think that's the big worry of quote-unquote regulation, is regulation is only as good as the regulators that are doing it, right? And how many conflicts of interest they have, how much power they have to really protect the consumer and do the things that will legitimize the cryptocurrency space. And I think if there is that, then it can continue to grow. But the more that there are scams, you know, you have certain, FTX, right, collapsing. It's not good for the space. It's not good for the reputation. And if you continue to have those because of poor regulation, then, you know, I think it's going to continue to struggle. And it's going to be, you know, regardless, it's going to be very tied to liquidity dynamics in the market. You see that, right? 2022, what happened? NASDAQ was down 33%. What happened to Bitcoin? It went down considerably. Zoom out here. You know, it peaked in late 2021 at 67,000 and fell all the way to 17,000. Now we're back up to 105 and change. It could easily go back down to 40,000, 30,000, 40,000, 50,000. I see no reason why that can't happen. So understand that it's going to be very volatile. Understand that regulation probably won't solve everything. And Bitcoin is very different than these altcoins and other aspects of cryptocurrency. Now, I hope you're telling your friends and family that our audio podcasts are available in video form over on our YouTube channel. So let's go answer one of those questions from there now. Jim Lay says, what do you think of ALG stock? Is it a good long-term hold? ALG is the symbol, and we're looking at Alamo Group? Alamo Group. All right. So let me pull this up here. ALG. Now, ALG, small cap name, about $2.5 billion market cap. They manufacture equipment for right-of-way maintenance, agricultural, industrial, and government and commercial markets. I generally like this. It tends to be in the ag space. Let me pull that up on a different. Usually, I like to see the breakdown of their revenue between different, okay, so 48% is machinery manufacturing in the ag space, basically agricultural and farming. 51% is conventional vehicle manufacturing. Okay, interesting. So kind of split 50-50 there. You have earnings expected to go up this year 3% after being down 12% last year, then up 11% next year. The trend in earnings are positive, although last quarter, revenues fell 8%, earnings fell 2%. Longer term, it does have a pretty good growth trajectory, just consistently earning more and more money. $200 million in free cash flow, I like that. About 11, 12% free cash flow, return on equity, I like that, that's solid. I don't like that it's continuing to issue more shares, it's not taking that cash flow to buy back shares. I would like to see that a bit more. The chart is okay. You know, it's rallied. It's up on the year, unlike a lot of things. And so technicals are now turned from neutral to slightly bullish. And I like the ag space, so this it's tough to find good exposure there. So I'm going to give Alamo a thumbs up because I like the balance sheet, very little debt, and I like the space that it's in. Now, as we head into break, let me tell you about the new InvestTalk store. I invite you to make it your destination for exclusive InvestTalk merchandise. So head over to theinvesttalkstore.com. We're heading to a break now at 888-99-CHART.
The InvestTalk phone lines never close. And now, Justin Klein is here taking your calls live. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hey, folks, this is Matthew calling from Kentucky. I love your show. Appreciate all the advice. Ticker symbol that I'm looking at is Boeing, BA. It's something that I've been invested in for quite some time. Just wanted to hear your advice on that as far as holding my position.
All right, looking at Boeing, and if you've paid attention to markets for any length of time, you know that Boeing's had some problems, both with safety, with their workers, with leadership, allocation of capital, just across the board. It's just been a disaster for the last about decade or so, maybe a little less, but call it decade, because these things build. And I said this a while ago, a few years ago, that until Boeing cleans house on its management team, I just don't find it investable. I think management is so important, especially for these companies that are big and diverse and have a very complex product to produce. And they were in a position of dominance. And when companies become too dominant, they slack off. They allow that dominance to create overconfidence in their product, and they turn to financial engineering. That's what happened with Boeing for a while. They were just sitting there because they could borrow money. They borrowed money and they bought back stock. And their debt levels ballooned. And then you had COVID. Okay. And suddenly they had demand fall off a cliff. And, you know, back in 2018, they only had $12 billion in debt. And by June of 2020, they had $60 billion. And, you know, that rise in debt wasn't just because of COVID. Okay. If you look at March of 2020, it was at $38 billion. So it was already skyrocketing pre-COVID. And that was mainly because the disaster, the safety issues with the Dreamliner. And, you know, they used that cash flow to buy back stock, and they didn't focus on their core product. And this is all about poor leadership. And that leadership is still there. So while we had deals with, you know, UAE going to buy some Boeing planes, I don't think it solves their core problem. Bad leadership, and now a worry about safety of their products, which is the bread and butter of any airline company. It should be safety. And they let that get away from them. And so until there's leadership that can come in and reinstill a culture of safety, I just don't think it's investable. So I wouldn't own it. Thanks for the call. Now, lastly, I want to touch on a potential rule that could be implemented sometime, I think, in the Trump administration. And it's about what's called the supplementary leverage ratio. What this does is will allow banks to hold low-risk assets, such as U.S. Treasuries, on their balance sheet, and it's not a hit to their leverage. Basically, banks in a fractional reserve banking system, banks have leverage. Typically, it's 10 to 1. Commercial banks can lend leverage up to 10 to 1. So they have $1 billion in assets. They can make $10 billion in loans. Okay. Now, owning a treasury effectively is loaning money out right to the U.S. government. And this would say that doesn't count. Those assets, lending in the U.S. government, doesn't count towards that $10 billion. So it allows those banks to lend more. And I think this is the number one biggest lever that any administration has to pull, which is to allow these banks to buy basically an unlimited amount of treasuries, which allows the government to borrow infinitely and to keep the treasury market functioning. But it would be highly, highly inflationary, but it would also be bullish for equities. So it's something I'll be watching to see if this gets implemented. And if it does, you have to take it as bullish for markets. Well, that about does it. I'm Justin Klein. This completes another Invest Talk program. We thank you for listening. We encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes, Spotify, Google Play. Be sure to rate and review on iTunes. And if today's show made you think about your own financial picture, your investments, taxes, retirement, and whether it's really working together, let's talk about it. At KPP Financial, we offer a no-cost portfolio review to help you bring clarity and confidence to your financial picture. And we practice parallel investing, which means we invest right alongside our clients. So just go to investtalk.com and click on the portfolio review button. Independent thinking, shared success. It's Invest Talk. Good night.
Invest Talk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.